You are listening to audio recorded at the Village Church. For more information, go to villagechurchbaltimore.com.
Okay, if I haven't gotten the chance to meet you yet, my name is Larry, and I'm an assistant pastor here at the Village Church. So we're officially in the holiday season, as probably many of you guys are aware of. One of the cool things about the holiday season is there's a lot of good deals, okay? So I love getting good deals everywhere, like Craigslist, Goodwill, Amazon, whatever. That's just my thing. And so sometimes during the holiday season, actually this year in particular, I've been finding myself going a little bit crazy with the deals. And there are times where I talk to VK and I say, hey, I found this online. I've been wanting this for about a week, and so what do you think? And she would go, no, do you really need that? And we have this little back and forth, and so that happens a lot. And it's sort of odd for me because a few years ago, I sort of prided myself as someone who was sort of above the fray of it all, you know, above the fray of Black Friday or Cyber Monday. Like, I almost looked down on people who participated in those things, and now I feel like I'm the target market. You know, like I'm the reason why these things exist. And I don't think I'm alone. You know, this year in America, I was looking this up. On Black Friday, stores made $5 billion, which is 25 times more money than charities received on Giving Tuesday. 25 times more money than charities received on Giving Tuesday. And of course, you know, getting holiday deals, it's not bad. It's not wrong. And I don't want you to feel guilty if you bought some things too. But I just think it's odd sometimes that we have these two big holidays, Thanksgiving, which is all about being thankful and being grateful for what you have. And then you have Christmas, which is about recognizing the humility that God went through, his humble origins in being born in a manger. And so in between these two holidays about gratitude and humility, you have a month of just this craziness where people just, this epitome of American consumerism. For the next few Sundays, we'll be doing this mini sermon series on generosity. And our hope is that during this time of the year, in addition to thinking about the holidays, in addition to thinking about getting the good deals or putting up the Christmas decorations or buying gifts for your kids, I want to encourage you to add this other additional component to your list of things to think about, which is, how can I be generous this year? How can I be generous this year? Because if I were to encompass what Christmas is all about, what this holiday season is about, I would say one of the most important things about this whole thing is the fact that God gave his one and only son to us, and in response, we give generously as well. And in our society, if anybody is going to be generous, then it's got to be the church. If you want to see change in society, it has to start with us. We need to be the people who will be generous with our money, generous with our possessions, generous with our time, generous with our relationships. And it may take some paradigm shifting habit changes. And so that's what we're going to be talking about. Today, I want to lay a foundation for generosity. I want to talk about what it means to be generous and why we are to be generous. And to do that, I'll be diving into 2 Corinthians 8. But just to give you some context before I dive in, 2 Corinthians 8, Paul is writing this, and he's writing this to the church in Corinth in the surrounding area called Achaia. And one of the things he was doing during this time was he was raising money for the poor in Jerusalem. There were a lot of Christian poor in Jerusalem, and Paul was actually going around sort of like he was fundraising while he was church planting for the poor in Jerusalem. And in Romans 15, 25 to 26, Paul writes, "At present, however, I'm going to Jerusalem bringing aid to the saints, for Macedonia and Achaia have been pleased to make some contribution for the poor among the saints in Jerusalem." So that's what he's been doing. He's been going around raising money for the poor. And that's very appropriate for our time because oftentimes we hear about all these things going on. We hear about natural disasters. We hear about people suffering all around the world. And this is a very common experience that we face too. We hear about things going on elsewhere, and we hear about opportunities to give, right? And so here's a map, because I really like maps. All right, here's a map. Jerusalem is at the bottom right of this map. And Jerusalem was a city that was primarily occupied by Jews. Okay, and during Paul's day, many of these Christian Jews in Jerusalem were poor. And so Paul was traveling around to these different places, and you can see Macedonia and Achaia on the top left. Okay, these were Roman provinces, and they were primarily consisted of Gentiles. And so they were a different ethnic group, right? And they were 2,000 miles away, very far away. But Paul was going to these places, and many of these people, they probably didn't have a connection with Jerusalem, to raise money. And Paul was saying, he later goes on to say in 2 Corinthians 8, I've received a lot of money from Macedonia, and now I'm writing to you, Corinth, which is in Achaia, and I would love for you to give as well. So that's sort of the context of 2 Corinthians. And during this sermon, what I want to do is I want to pull out seven big principles in regard to generosity. So that's a lot, okay? So I want to breeze through it. But there's seven big takeaways, I think, where we can learn about what is Christian generosity and why are we to be generous, okay? So that's what we'll be doing. And hopefully, by looking at these, we can start to shape our attitudes about generosity this season, okay? So number one, Christian generosity is rooted in the grace of God. Christian generosity is rooted in the grace of God. Paul starts the section off, 2 Corinthians 8, verse 1, by saying, we want you to know, brothers, about the grace of God that has been given among the churches of Macedonia. And if you read on, he's not talking about salvation, or he's not talking about prosperity. He's talking about their generosity. He's saying, these Macedonian churches are generous, and he refers to that as the grace of God. And he does it again over and over throughout the chapter. If you look ahead in verse 6, he says he refers to this as an act of grace. In verse 7, again, he refers to it as an act of grace. And so what does generosity have to do with grace? Honestly, everything. Elsewhere in Ephesians 2, Paul writes, for by grace you have been saved through faith, and this is not your own doing. It is the gift of God, not a result of works, so that no one may boast. And so Paul is saying this gift of God that we have is given to us through grace, by grace. It is by grace we have been saved. It is not our own doing. It is the gift of God. And so another way to think about this is our salvation is utterly dependent on the generosity of God. Our salvation is utterly dependent on the generosity of God. God could have just sat back and did nothing. He could have just watched us suffer and just do our own things. But he chose to voluntarily jump into our mess and to be generous up to the point so that Jesus would lay down his life for us. And so our salvation lays the whole foundation for our generosity because it is because of God's generosity that the church is generous. Right? Our generosity relies solely on our salvation, which is founded on God's generosity. And so, according to Ephesians 2, if your generosity causes you to boast, then it is not Christian generosity. If your generosity allows you yourself to pat yourself on the back, and you say, look at this great work that I've done, then it's not Christian generosity. Because true Christian generosity relies solely on the fact that we have received grace from God. And it is God who boasts. And it is God who has done the work. And so when we understand the grace of God, that we have been, that we had nothing, but God blessed us, that we were sinful, but God saved us, that we were dead in our sins, but God made us alive. When we understand that, then we respond with generosity. That's how it works. And this was demonstrated clearly in the story of Zacchaeus. I love the story of Zacchaeus. I think it's just it's sort of a side. I think it's sort of fascinating when the Bible describes people with physical characteristics. And so Zacchaeus is described as a short man. And so I just think that's sort of funny. Anyways, Zacchaeus was a rich man also. And when he heard Jesus calling him, he responded with generosity. In Luke 19, it goes, and Zacchaeus stood and said to the Lord, behold, Lord, the half of my goods I give to the poor, and I have defrauded, if I have defrauded anyone of anything, I restore it fourfold. So you have this guy, he's a rich man, and he lived all of his life being a tax collector, and we don't know his story very much, but we do know when he encountered Jesus, when Jesus said, salvation has come to this house, he decided to respond with generosity. And that's a huge principle for us to learn, that salvation precedes and results in generosity. How radical is that? To give away half of your possessions to the poor. Who would do something like that? The person who understands the grace of God. That's who does something like that. And I'm harping on this point because my next several points, if you go throughout this passage, anytime a church talks about money or generosity, it can come across legalistically, right? We can read about generosity or hear people talk about generosity, and we can feel guilty or ashamed or whatever. And so this point is super important because it lays the foundation for everything else. Unless we understand the generosity of God, Christian generosity will just sound like legalism and foolish legalism at best. Because we're talking about ourselves following all these things, and all of a sudden we don't have anything left, right? And so unless we understand the generosity of God, everything sounds like foolishness. But if we do understand the generosity of God, everything changes. So number one, Christian generosity is rooted in the grace of God. Number two, Christian generosity gives even in poverty. Christian generosity gives even in poverty. And this is from verse 2. I'll just keep going, starting from verse 1. We want you to know, brothers, about the grace of God that has been given among the churches of Macedonia. What is this grace? For in a severe test of affliction, their abundance of joy and their extreme poverty have overflowed in a wealth of generosity on their part. That's ridiculous. Do you see how ridiculous that is? See verse 2. It doesn't say in a severe state of comfort. It says in a severe state, a test of affliction, right? It doesn't say their extreme prosperity. It says their extreme poverty. So you have these Macedonians. They are afflicted. They're in poverty. And they are overflowing with this wealth of generosity. I'm reminded of the story of the widow giving money in the temple. This is in Mark 12. And so these many rich people that came and they donated these huge amounts and they were very wealthy. And then this poor woman came and she dropped 2 copper coins. And Jesus said to his disciples, truly I say to you, this poor widow has put in more than all those who are contributing to the offering box. For they all contributed out of their abundance, but she out of her poverty has put in everything she had, all she had to live on. There's a fascinating truth here, which is that ultimately Christian generosity is not measured by the amount of your gift, but by the sacrifice of your gift. And it is maximized, it is most effective when you are afflicted and when you are in poverty. There's a story I think often about when I think about generosity. Several years ago, I worked in college ministry. And that was my full-time job. And one of the things I had to do was I had to raise money, sort of like what Paul did, except I was doing it for myself, I guess. But I was doing this, and I was going around, I went to my home church back in California, and I was presenting sort of my ministry and why I was raising funds and things like that. And I noticed in the audience there was this man. I never talked to this man before, but I knew who he was because I won't go into all the details, but shortly before that day, one of my family members had really hurt this guy and his family. And I remember thinking, oh, why is this guy here? He doesn't even know who I am, really. Why is he here? Is he going to stand up and like accuse me of something? I was just pretty afraid. But I gave him a presentation, and I sat down. We didn't talk, and that was it. And about a week later, he wrote me a check for $1,000. And it just shocked me because if you knew what happened, like, it would have made no sense for this guy to give money to me because someone in my family really hurt him, and he lost a lot because of someone in my family. But he chose to give $1,000 to my ministry. Why would someone do that? In the midst of his affliction, in the midst of his poverty, why would he choose to give so much money to me? Because Christian generosity is rooted in grace, and Christian generosity gives even in poverty. If you are generous only in your abundance, only when you're having a good day, only when you have an extra amount of money in the bank, only when you feel like you're in the mood to say something like keep the change, that is not Christian generosity. Christian generosity is characterized by giving all the time, in all circumstances, even in affliction, even in poverty. Because ultimately, Christian generosity is not measured by the amount of your gift, but by the sacrifice of your gift. And that's the next point. Number 3, Christian generosity demands sacrifice. Verse 3, for they gave according to their means, as I can testify, and beyond their means. What does it look like to give beyond your means? That doesn't even, in our mind, it doesn't even make sense because the way we do things is we have a budget we have a budget for this, we have a budget for this, we have a budget for this, and well, maybe some of you guys don't even have budgets, but some of us, we have budgets, and then we say, this budget is for this, and so I'm going to stick to my budget, and I'm going to give that. But what does it look like to give beyond your means? It's not just asking, what can I afford to give? It's saying, okay, here's what I can afford to give, and how can I give more than what I can afford to give? True generosity impacts the way we live. And so if your giving doesn't impact the way you live, then I would say that isn't true giving at all. And I love what C.S. Lewis, he writes in his book, Mere Christianity. I do not believe one can settle how much we ought to give. I'm afraid the only safe rule is to give more than we can spare. In other words, if our expenditure, our comforts, luxuries, amusements, etc., is up to the standard common of those with the same income as our own, we are probably giving away too little. If our charities do not at all pinch or hamper us, I should say they are too small. They ought to be things that we'd like to do but cannot do because our charitable expenditure excludes them. So what he's saying is, you make a certain amount of income, okay? And what he's suggesting is you should compare yourself to other people who have the same amount of income. And if you see that your lifestyle is exactly the same as their lifestyle, then he's saying that's one of the signs that maybe you're not giving enough. Because true charity means your life has to be impacted. Because true giving demands sacrifice. What does sacrifice mean? It doesn't mean your life is exactly the same. It means your life is now hampered, hurt, somehow more uncomfortable because you gave. And so when we are truly generous, it means that we will not be able to do certain things. We will not be able to get certain things otherwise. And I'm not talking about things you can't afford anyways. I'm not saying like, oh, I gave this month and now I can't buy a Ferrari. It's not like that. You have to compare it to what you could have afforded from initially. So being generous is intentionally deciding, okay, there's this thing I want. I know I can afford it. And so what I'm going to do is I'm going to choose not to afford it by giving away my money so that I can't afford it anymore. That's what true generosity is. Because if your giving does not affect your living, then you're not really giving at all. If your giving does not affect your living, you're not really giving at all. Number four, Christian generosity takes initiative. This is in verse 4, begging us earnestly for the favor of taking part in the relief of the saints. And I just love this picture of the Macedonians begging us earnestly for the favor of taking part of the relief of the saints, because it doesn't look like, you know, Paul was pulling their teeth to try to force them to give. What was going on was the Macedonians, they found out, they took initiative, they found out that these people were suffering, and then they found out that there is this opportunity to help, and they said, how could we help? We want to do that too. We want to get involved. And so they begged earnestly to get involved. And what would that look like today? You know, imagine, I mean, there's needs all around us all the time, but one recent need was people in Puerto Rico were begging earnestly for help because hurricanes ripped through Puerto Rico. And so what would it look like if it was the other way around? If it wasn't the Puerto Ricans begging earnestly for help, but it was people, you know, in Maryland begging earnestly to give, right? What would that look like? Because currently, often the way generosity works is that, you know, people go about, they do their own thing, and then their life gets interrupted by a giving opportunity, and then they say, okay, there's this interruption, I'll just give so that I can end this interruption so that I can continue my regular life, right? For example, you're going to a grocery store, someone is set up right there asking you to give, and you say, okay, I'll give. Or like you're driving on the street and someone is asking for money and you say, okay, I'll give. Or like you're going to church, like today, for example, and then at the church, people give a message about generosity and you say, okay, I'll give. Right? So that's the way giving works in our culture. You go about your regular life and then you are interrupted somehow by some opportunity to give, and maybe it's partially gills, partially like privilege or whatever, but you just, okay, I'll give. That's just how generosity often works in our country, right? We are only interrupted by opportunities of generosity, but we might not actually pursue opportunities of generosity. We don't have this mentality of begging earnestly to give. But I want to suggest that Christian generosity does exactly that. Christian generosity takes initiative. It requires sitting down and deciding, okay, how much do I want to give? Here's my budget. I want to live sacrificially. I want to be uncomfortable in my state relative to my salary. And so what do I want to give? You know, recently, Pastor Dan, people have been talking about giving and taxes and things like that. And so that's a conversation we've been having in our family too. And one of the things we've been talking about is how much do we want to give? Right? VK and I, that's just, I think it's helpful for every family to have that conversation every now and then to just look at your income and just to reassess how are we doing in our giving. And so we were talking, we were looking at old tax records because a few years ago we had sort of committed, we're going to hit this certain percentage of our income level and dedicate it to giving. So here's our income level. We're going to say this percentage we're going to give to giving, whether it's giving to churches, nonprofits, people on the streets, friends, strangers, whatever. Okay, we're going to dedicate this percentage of our income to giving. And recently, I was looking at my tax records and was looking at my receipts, and I was doing the math, and I realized we actually were not hitting that percentage level, right? And I'm just honest with you. That's what we realized. And so we decided, you know what? By the end of this year, we want to give some more. We want to give abundantly more than we have been this year because we want to give more. And so what does that look like? So this is a very different type of giving than, oh, I'm just walking around the street and, oh, here's an opportunity to give. This requires planning. This requires intentionally thinking about what you're comfortable doing, what you're not comfortable doing, and making the decision to be uncomfortable, right? Because why are we doing something like this? Because Christian generosity doesn't just naturally happen. No one just slips into Christian generosity. You might slip into giving out money, but no one slips into true Christian generosity, because true Christian generosity requires taking initiative. It requires eagerly searching for opportunities. Here's another one. Christian generosity is surrender to God. Verse 5, "And this not as we expected, but they gave themselves first to the Lord and then by the will of God to us." Secular generosity consists of one person giving to another person. It's just two people involved. But Christian generosity is not just two isolated people involved. The way the transaction works is the one person gives to the Lord, and then the Lord distributes what has been given to the Lord. That's how Christian generosity works. And so this is very different, because in secular generosity, the giver is in charge. He or she owns whatever he owns, and he has the final say. He says, I'm going to give to this, I'm going to give to this, and I'm going to give to this, I'm going to keep this. He's in charge. But in Christian generosity, God is in charge. And what the giver has, he only secondarily has. He only secondarily possesses. God is a primary possessor. God is a primary owner of what the giver has. And the giver only is a secondary owner. And so what goes down is the giver gives everything that he has, even himself, okay, right? They gave themselves first to the Lord. The giver gives everything they have, even themselves, to the Lord. And then God decides how to allocate the resources. That's how Christian generosity works. What does that mean practically? I'm not saying you should just empty your bank account. What I'm saying is the issue at hand is I'm not necessarily talking about how we spend our money, or I'm talking about why do we spend the money on the things we spend the money on? And so here's what I'm talking about. You can save your money in a self-glorifying way, or you can save your money in a God-glorifying way. You can spend your money in a self-glorifying way, or you can spend your money in a God-glorifying way, right? Every decision you make, whether it's going to a restaurant or buying someone a gift, or, you know, whatever, all these decisions, you can do them in a self-glorifying way or in a God-glorifying way. And so I think what Paul is suggesting and what the Bible is suggesting is our generosity needs to be characterized through this lens of everything is God's, and so that every decision I make, from the smallest to the greatest, every single handle of my finances, in my time and my resources, whatever, all of that has to revolve around, am I giving God glory in this? Am I dedicating this to know God, to make God known? Is that my sole purpose? Or am I binging in something? Or am I selfishly living? Or am I operating out of pride or whatever? Am I doing this for God? That has to be the lens through which we spend our money. So number six, Christian generosity requires, am I on number six? I don't even know. Number five, Christian generosity requires following through. Christian generosity requires following through. Verses 6-7. Accordingly, we urge Titus that as he had started, so he should complete among you this act of grace. There it is again. Paul is referring to generosity as this act of grace. But as you excel in everything, in faith and speech and knowledge and in all earnestness and in our love for you, see that you excel in this act of grace also. We don't know too much of what is going on, but we can sort of gather a picture from different passages. But it seems like at one point in time, Titus had talked to the church in Corinth, and the church of Corinth had agreed to give this chunk of money, and they were excited. But then there was a delay. It was about a year or so passed, and they didn't give very much or at all. And so Paul is sending Titus again, and he's saying, why don't you finish the work that you started? And so, and it's interesting the way he phrases it, because Paul is saying, you guys are excelling in all these ways. You're excelling in faith. You know, you're committed to following Jesus. You're excelling in speech. You know, you're talking a great game. You know, you're excelling in knowledge. You know your stuff. You're excelling in earnestness. You're passionate. You're authentic. You're excelling in love. You genuinely care for each other. But he's asking, but are you going to follow through? Are you going to follow through? Here's the thing. We live in a world where people don't often follow through. Many people talk about a lot of things, but they don't necessarily do a lot of things. We have become experts at sharing our opinions with others. We have become experts at telling people how to do things. We have become experts at coming up with great ideas. We have become experts at sharing articles or videos on social media. But are we walking the talk? Are we walking the talk? And that trend is well and alive in the church. You know, and I'm guilty of this as well. You know, many Christians, they substitute doing Christian activities with simply talking about Christian activities. Many Christians substitute doing Christian activities with simply talking about Christian activities, and they think that if they just talk enough about the Christian activities, talk about, oh, this is the right way to do it, this is the wrong way to do it, or this is a sustainable way of doing it, or whatever. If they just talk about this enough, then that's good enough. You know, maybe some people, they talk about evangelism. They say, oh, this is a good way to do evangelism. This is not very contextualized, and this is appropriate for a postmodern culture. But they don't even do evangelism themselves. Or they talk about worship. They talk about, oh, this is a good way to do this song, and this is a good way to play this song, and, you know, I like this rendition. But they don't actually personally worship God. And it's the same with generosity. Some Christians spend a lot of time talking about generosity, but they don't follow through. You know, sometimes I can be like that too. Sometimes we, you know, I've been guilty of all of these things. Sometimes we condemn rich Christians for owning nice things, for hoarding things, and we accuse them of not being generous. Sometimes we look down on people that we view them to be recipients of generosity, and we feel like they're not using their money well, whether it's a person on the street, whether it's a church, whether it's a nonprofit, right? Sometimes we critique different organizations. We think they're making poor financial decisions, or we feel like they're not financially transparent, so we critique them. Sometimes we gripe about how different organizations are not woke enough, or they're not fill in the blank. They're not thinking in sustainable terms, or they're not thinking long terms, or they're not contextualizing the ministry. We have all these criteria that we come up with, okay? And we accuse all these people of not spending their money well, and all the while, if not all of us, but sometimes if we are immersed in these conversations enough, we won't follow through. We won't be generous ourselves. Sometimes when we get too immersed in these conversations about this and that and accusing people of this and that, we become a problem ourselves. Now I want to encourage you to examine your own heart. Obviously, people, organizations, churches, they might not spend money in the best ways. Nobody is perfect, and that's a problem. That's okay to admit. It's okay to be wise, to look into the facts, and to explore. I think that all of that's good, but does your awareness of these problems cause you to become less generous? Does your awareness of these problems cause you to be less generous? I think that's the crux. If your awareness of these problems cause you to say, okay, you know what?
I'm going to help fix this problem, and I want to give, and I want to walk with this. I want to be in partnership with this, whatever, whether it's a person or a church or organization, so that I can help this church do its work better. That's great. But if your recognition of these problems leads you to say, I'm not going to give. I'm just not going to give to this. I'm not going to give this. You know what? There's no perfect organization. I'm just not going to give at all. I'm just going to give to myself. What are you saying? You're saying that you don't have the problems that everybody else has. That's what you're saying. I want to suggest that our lack of generosity is just as much of a problem as the problems that we perceive other organizations have. Our lack of generosity is just as much of a problem as the problems we perceive other organizations have. And so our generosity cannot be dependent on the merit of the recipients of our generosity, because we will never find the perfect people to give to or the perfect organizations to give to. But just because these things don't meet our standards doesn't mean we should not give. And why is that? Because at the core of the gospel is the message of God who gave his son to a people without merit. God gave Jesus to us not because we were the perfect group of people, because we had it all put together, because we were financially transparent, or because we were good stewards. He gave his one and only son to us in the midst of our sin and brokenness. So what is more important than finding the perfect recipient of your giving is making sure that you are giving at all. So practically, how can we give? I'm going to interrupt my points for a little bit to give a quick practical application. Maybe some of you guys are fired up right now and you want to give, and you want a tangible step to live out Christian generosity. You want to know, how can you be generous this season? Well, lucky you, today's your lucky day. In front of you in the pews, there is a sheet of paper titled, Ways to be Generous This Season. And it's green, and I have it right here. There are, of course, lots of ways to be generous. We encourage many ways to be generous. But here are just two opportunities that our church has identified. We want to encourage as many people as possible in our church body to participate in these two opportunities. The first is Baltimore Children. These are children and families who they've been connected with our church in some way. Maybe their family picked up a turkey on Thanksgiving. Maybe they participate in VBS. And so if you want to be involved in that, you can check that, okay? And buying Christmas gifts for them. Okay, that's an opportunity. Number two, Haiti students. Earlier, Pastor Dan mentioned our upcoming Haiti trip. It's going to happen again this upcoming year, but one of the things we're doing in the meantime is we are supporting their school. And this is called the Philadelphia Christian School in Fontaine, Haiti. And there's two ways we're doing this. Number one is many of these kids, they don't eat lunch. Actually, all these kids, they practically don't eat lunch. Okay. And so they go to school, there's no lunch. And so what we decided is, how can you learn if you don't have food? We're going to buy lunch for all these kids. So that's something our church has committed to. If you want to give to that fund, you can check that. Another way is you can help support individual students. The lack of education is a huge problem in Haiti. I won't go into all the details, but I just found a few quick stats. The average Haitian 25 years or older has less than 5 years of schooling. Only 25% of middle and high school age children attend school. Okay, and a huge problem in Haiti is there's a lack of public school education, because the government doesn't have enough funds. And so the large majority of schools are private schools. And so if you don't afford the tuition, you just drop out of school. You can't go, right? And so what we're doing is there's this child sponsorship program. You can find more info on this sheet. It's in the back on the info table. But there's a child sponsorship program that we're participating in. And if you give $30 a month, you can ensure that a child is able to pay for the tuition, the clothes, the books, the fees, things like that necessary to go to school. So if you'd like to participate, what you can do is check these off, okay, on your own time, and then drop it off in the box behind the last pew in the back of the sanctuary. Those are some great ways to give. I'm not saying these are the only ways to give. I'm saying these are excellent ways to live out Christian generosity. I want to keep going, because this last point is perhaps the most important point. Christian generosity is personified in Jesus. Christian generosity is personified in Jesus. Perhaps some of you are excited to give, but maybe others of you, and I would say many of you, maybe when you hear messages like this, you don't feel excited to give. You just feel guilty. Maybe you just feel, oh man, I hate these messages. I'm already strapped as it is. I don't like these messages, and I'm just sort of sitting here because it's rude to get up, but I'm sitting through. Maybe you're examining your heart, and the reason why is maybe you're examining your heart and you're saying, you know what? All of these standards for Christian generosity, I just feel like they're just shooting me down. I just feel condemned right now because I'm not meeting any of these standards. I'm not living this sacrificially. I'm not giving this radically. And I want to say none of us is generous enough. We are all too selfish. We are all too critical. We are all too possessive. We don't have this level of generosity that the Macedonian church demonstrated. So what do we do? Verses 8 and 9. I say this not as a command. This is not legalism. But to prove by the earnestness of others that your love also is genuine. For you know the grace of our Lord Jesus Christ, that though he was rich, yet for your sake he became poor, so that you by his poverty might become rich. Christian generosity is personified, encapsulated, represented by Jesus. The way we become generous is not through hearing a message where people beat you up and then you just feel guilty and you become generous. That's not the way we become generous. The way we become generous is by dwelling, clinging to Jesus. Dwelling in Jesus and clinging to Jesus and remembering that God was generous to us through Jesus. How Jesus had everything. He had every possession possible, right? He the universe, okay? That was his possession. He had the perfect family, the Trinity, okay? He had the perfect home, heaven. He had everything you could ever imagine. And what did he do? He chose to give it all away. He chose to become poor. He gave it all away to become a lonely, homeless, hungry, tired, beaten, naked man on a cross. And why did he do that? For us. To save and rescue us from sin and death, to restore us to the family of God. Jesus' generosity did not depend on our merits. He didn't say, you know, these human beings, they don't manage their resources well, and they don't seem to be that morally fit, and they don't seem to make good long-term decisions. He just chose to give it all away. He saw we were broken and messed up, and he died for us anyway. At the end of the day, what matters most is not how generous we are. What matters most is how generous God is. And we can take comfort that God was generous. How? Because I'm going to list my points again. We said that Christian generosity is rooted in the grace of God. The one and only reason why any of us can give away anything at all, the only reason why we can extend the grace to anybody else, is because God first extended grace to us. Jesus, though he was rich, for our sake became poor, and that is the reason why our generosity can be based on the grace of God. We said that Christian generosity gives even in poverty. Jesus gave generously even in poverty. He gave to become a human baby, and even after he became a human baby, after he was poor, he kept giving. When he was abandoned by his followers, he kept giving. And when he was mocked and flogged, he kept giving. And when he was stripped of his clothes, he kept giving. When he was nailed to the cross, he kept giving. He gave until he had nothing left. He embodied this Christian generosity. We said that Christian generosity demands sacrifice. Nobody embodied sacrifice the way Jesus did. He spared nothing. He gave everything up. We said that Christian generosity takes initiative. Well, Jesus was a man of initiative. He didn't just wait to be interrupted by a need, right? He didn't just go about his day and then just notice, oh, here's an opportunity to give. He intervened into our history, became a human baby, took initiative to touch people and to heal people. He took initiative to die on the cross when he didn't have to. He came to seek and to save the lost. He didn't wait for the lost to find him. We said that Christian generosity is surrender to God. Jesus, above all else, submitted wholly to the Father's will. He prayed in the garden right before he died, not my will, but your will be done. We said that Christian generosity requires follow through. And Jesus didn't just teach the gospel, but he lived the gospel. He didn't just say, turn the other cheek. He turned the other cheek. He didn't just say, love your neighbor as yourself. He loved his neighbor as himself. He didn't just say, forgive others. He actually forgave those who crucified him. He actually followed through by living it out. Christian generosity is personified in Jesus. And therefore, when we go through moments of guilt, maybe right now you're feeling guilty about not giving, and we don't feel generous, we feel condemned, we feel ashamed, all you need to do is remember Jesus. Because what matters most is not how generous you are, but how generous Jesus was. Because at the end of the day, we are saved by grace, not by works. And so we don't give in order to remove our guilt. We don't give in order to remove our guilt. We give because through grace, our guilt has already been removed. We give not so that we can boast. We give because God can boast in the fact that he has rescued us already. And so cling to Jesus, surrender to Jesus, give yourself to him, and allow the power of his generosity to transform your heart. Let's pray. Maybe some of you guys are here and you're hearing about all these things about Jesus, and maybe it's clicking for the first time. I didn't realize all the things that Jesus went through in order to save me. I don't think I really understood the depths of his love before, the depths of his sacrifice. And if that's you, I want to invite you to come to Jesus. Come and experience Jesus. Come experience Jesus the way Zacchaeus experienced Jesus, where he encountered Jesus and he said, you know what? This is the most amazing thing I've ever heard. My life is flipped upside down. I cannot be living the same way I used to live. And my only response that I can think of is to give away half of my possessions. Maybe there's some of you in here in this room that you need that sort of experience. You encounter Jesus and you need a life shift, a life transformation. If that's you, I want to invite you today to make that decision and say, Jesus, thank you so much for your generosity, for your death on the cross, forgiving me of my sins and paying that penalty. I want to follow you. I want to invite you to make that decision today. Maybe others of you, you already made that decision, but you're just so flabbergasted and you're so overwhelmed by the standard of generosity. And you just feel like, I can never do something like that. And my response to you is the same. I want to invite you to come to Jesus, surrender yourself to Jesus, and relish in his generosity, because at the end of the day, it's not about our generosity. It's about Jesus' generosity.